Hey guys, this is the Hard Time Strongman podcast. This is Six. I'm here with Seven today. As we're recording, it is 9/11. At the time you're going to be listening to this, it's going to be the Saturday afterwards. So this episode is going to be in remembrance of not just the first 9/11 in 2001, but also the second one that took place in 2012. We're not here to talk about the politics, the causality, the theories surrounding the attacks that happened on 9/11, because you may have your own beliefs. You may believe what the government's telling you. You may not believe what the government tells you.
And while it's important to, it is important to know exactly what happened and to have your eyes open in that. Like you said, that's not what the episode's about. We promised over 20 years ago that we would never forget. And yeah, we are holding to that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what we're here to do today is to remember and honor those that both survived and also made the ultimate sacrifice on both dates of 9/11. There was 11 year separation on these, and we lost a significant amount of people.
Well, not just in those attacks, but in the aftermath of both of those. So absolutely. September 11th, 2001, we were attacked in three separate incidents. So in New York City, the World Trade Center, several attacks on both towers, which ended in three collapsed buildings. What happened to Building 7.
No, we don't talk about Building 7.
But we did lose 2,753 lives. And in Arlington, Virginia, the Pentagon was attacked, causing the deaths of 184 people.
And most famously, in the skies above Shanksville, Pennsylvania, the passengers of Flight 93 fought back against their hijackers once they learned of the other attacks. And this resulted in the downing of said aircraft and the deaths of all 40 passengers and the crew members.
Those call logs, those voicemails still kill me.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's just gut-wrenching. But all told, guys, 2,977 people died as a direct result of the 2001 attacks, making it the most deadly attack on U.S. soil since 2,403 Americans died at Pearl Harbor.
Like we said at the beginning of the episode, all those years ago, we promised to never forget. The country promised to never forget. And outside of first responders and military, I feel like a lot of the country has, which breaks my heart.
We were never more united. We were never more patriotic than we were on that day and the following months.
Well, it was such a, tragically, right? A uniting experience, but it was a generational experience. I mean, that was the reason I joined. Mm-hmm. I was a kid. Just starting elementary school, and I remember that day clear as day. And I know that really hurt you, but
my back hurts, my knees hurt.
But since I was a kid, I remember that. And that shaped so much of my life. My sisters tell me that when, after the attacks, they remember they were, all the guys in the high school, left same day, next day to go to recruit or go join up. And, every year the guys came back from deployment, they'd have, welcome home parties and everything else. But it was such a big part of the culture, year after year after year. And, I read on Instagram, the country, prior to 9/11, that country doesn't exist anymore. We were fundamentally different. But, you know, it is important to never, you know, to never forget this, never forget the people, because that can get drowned out in all the crap, you know, surrounding the event and the years after. But
yeah, and you're going to go ahead and cut this next part out, but, you know, I was, well, maybe you won't. This may be a patron section. 2001, I was a freshman in high school, and I remember we were taking state standardized testing, I believe. It was either practice tests or it was the actual ones. But I do remember teacher coming in, telling us to stop what we were doing, turn our tests over. And she flipped on the TV just in time for the second plane to deliver the in-flight meal to that floor of the World Trade Center. It was, I didn't understand what the hell I was looking at. Like, I recognized it was a World Trade Center. I recognized that it was a plane that just went into it. I didn't know if it was a replay of the first one happening. I thought it was. I remember thinking that.
But still, like, how do you process that as a kid, though? You know what I mean?
You don't. Like, I honestly, in my mind, I'm just like, well, what are we doing? And the next thing I know, school's canceled. We're locked down. And I'm like, oh, cool. I don't have to take these tests. Oh, cool. I don't have to go to class. I'm good. I'm going to go home.
Yeah. I remember when I was a kid, it was like, we all got, you know, bused back home. It was like, just excited. It's like, oh, what's going on? You know, my parents had like the huge, like super wide, big TV. And it's like, you know, just watching that. My dad's like, you know, no, you're not watching this. And just,
How old were you?
2001, I was 7.
Oh, my back. Oh, my.
For I don't know if anybody outside of Patreon has heard us rant about this. You're 8 years older than me.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I heard, don't it?
I am in pain right now. No,
I feel physically and mentally like awful, so I can't imagine what you feel like. That's got to be the worst.
I go to a chiropractor every week. But no, it's, yeah, that is.
Womp womp.
Yeah. But no, like, it didn't hit me until later that was, something had gone absolutely horrifically wrong. And I didn't realize it at the time, but we were about to go into 20 plus years of a global war on terror. You know, yeah. I remember the stories of versus Gulf War, the Persian Gulf War.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember following it on the map. I remember the stories. And I'm just like, oh, this, we're going to war. This is going to be easy. We've done this before. You know, we're going to go into Afghanistan and we're going to wipe the map with these guys. You know, I didn't know anything about the Soviets getting their freaking crap pushed in by the Taliban
or guerrilla warfare or anything.
Not the Taliban, the Mujahideen. I didn't know anything about that. I didn't know that the Soviets had lost in Afghanistan. I didn't know this was the same place that we were going into. You know, I was thinking, oh, we're going into Iraq. This is going to be easy. We've done this before. We have better technology now. We have more troops. This is going to be so easy. Fast forward. Okay, sure. Iraq was not a cakewalk. Afghanistan, well, we know the result there.
Yeah.
That land is still, I think, unconquered. Yeah, for what is right? Like, how many lives did we have to lose there over some crappy dirt and some camel spiders? Like, what are we even doing there? So, sorry, enough of this rant. You know, we lost way too many good people for sure in the wars following. But that day, we definitely lost way too many people. But we could have lost way more had it not been for the efforts of like hundreds and hundreds of first responders.
Thousands. And, thousands.
Yeah, even, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And even like civilians on the street. And some of the more notable heroes from that day, we'll get into now. So like Rick Riscorla. Rick Riscorla. Yeah, he was the head of security for Morgan Stanley. And he is actually credited with saving over 2,700 lives by evacuating almost all of Morgan Stanley's 2,700 employees from the South Tower before it collapsed, despite being told by building officials that everybody was supposed to remain in place. Riscorla said, No. we're getting out of here. He was last seen heading back up the stairs to search for more survivors when the South Tower collapsed.
2,700 people. 2,700. And he was looking for more.
And he was going back in for more.
God, who is that? Who is the who's the combat mech in World War II? There's a recent movie about him. He was a conscientious objector.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about? Mormon?
Hacksaw Ridge?
Hacksaw Ridge. Yeah, that was the movie. Hacksaw Ridge, but what was the mech's name?
You got me. I'm thinking of it. I can't think of it off the top of my head. I remember, I haven't watched the movie, but I know I read about it.
Desmond Doss.
That's what it was. Yes.
Sorry. That just gives me the, you know, the vibe of, you know, Lord, let me save just one more.
Yes.
You evacuated. What almost all of Morgan Stanley's employees on the South Tower. So all 2,700 people, and you're still going back for more. Like, just. Yeah, amazing. That's a punch in the gut, man.
That's selflessness, man. That's absolute selflessness. It's like, I don't care what happens to me. Please let me save one more person. I'm going back in. You can come with me, or just get out of my way.
I mean, all these, and we'll get into all these stories, but the, you know, all these individual heroes, the, like, all the passengers on that flight, like, all these stories, it just makes me think of John 15:13. Greater love has no man than this, that one lay down his own life for his friends.
Yeah.
Just that abandon, that selflessness, like you said.
And in the midst of chaos, in the midst of carnage, all those strangers are now your friends. You're all in this together. It did not matter your race. It did not matter your religion. The only thing that mattered was getting everyone out. It didn't matter if you had an argument with that person an hour prior. Hey, man, let's go. Let's get out of here. Yeah. Grab two people. Have them grab two people. Let's go.
Yeah. Mm. And Father Michael Judge? You say Michael?
I think it's Michael.
Michael. I'd say Michael Judge. So Father Michael Judge was the first recorded fatality of 9/11. As New York Fire Department chaplain, he rushed to the World Trade Center to provide comfort to the injured and dying. Prayed over bodies and gave their last rites to the victims. He was killed by debris from the collapse of the North Tower while tending to others.
That's
so, even in their last moments. So imagine all of that chaos, all of that pain and suffering and fear, and golly, I'm gonna tear up. So just this Father Michael just going around to everyone on the ground in the dirt in the dust and doing the last best thing that he could do.
Right.
And then he died. Got killed by falling debris. Just.
Yeah.
God, this episode sucks.
I knew this.
Of course, we record on a Tuesday, but. Oh.
Yeah, I knew this episode was going to be a gut punch going through all these. There were so many other stories, too, and I had to cut them. Otherwise, we would have been on here for hours just talking about all of them.
Well, it really sucks that it takes the worst to bring out the best in us. But it does.
That's how it's always been, too. You know, some of the worst days in humanity's history has brought out, like, the best, the heroes. It's either made you or it's broken you. And this was one of those days as well.
Yeah.
Kind of like this next guy. Wells Crowther, better known as the man in the red bandana. That one actually stuck out to me almost as much as one of the ones we're going to talk about later. Anyway, he was an equities trader and a volunteer firefighter. He worked in the South Tower, and he led so many people to safety. He was using his red bandana that he constantly had in one of his pockets to shield his face from the smoke. He made multiple trips between the 78th and 61st floor. Between the 78th and 61st floors, helping people evacuate before eventually perishing when the building collapsed. And
that's 17 floors.
That's
17 floors, multiple trips with people.
Think about it. The firefighters that rushed in there, they couldn't get up to those floors.
You can't use an elevator.
They walked up all those flights of stairs. Walked up there.
He died in the building collapse.
And there were so many survivors ended up coming forward, crediting him for saving their lives. Man, the red bandana.
Like, imagine, like, all these guys, like, that's your legacy. You know what I mean?
I'd be fine
like with that. Like, that's a well done.
Yeah.
Flight 93, passengers and crew. So, Flight 93, like we talked about at the beginning of the episode, this was the flight that was headed to Washington, D.C., and this flight got hijacked. But gentlemen Tom Burnett, Mark Beam, you know, and others fought back against the hijackers after learning about the other attacks. So learning that, you know, there were attacks on the World Trade Center and this was headed to Washington, D.C. So they, you know, figured that this was going to be one of the, you know, just another attack on their countrymen. They tried to get control of the plane, which they thought would be aimed to target Washington, D.C. And they eventually were able to crash the plane in a field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, preventing any further loss of life.
I think
so, at the expense of the entire, like, all the passengers on that flight. They stopped any further loss of life.
Yeah, I mean, they were going to die regardless, so they figured no more. Like, we're not going to be part of more.
Yeah, you're not going to win. Like, you don't get to do that.
It still brings chills to me hearing some of those voicemails.
All the voicemails. Oh my gosh, man. All the recordings of the calls, all the voicemails. Like, it just.
Yeah. Especially that one. I think it was, what was the quote? Let's roll. And then they just went after him.
And you hear all the screaming and the fighting in the background.
Yeah.
God. Yeah. Just the courage, man. Like, that's just.
Yeah.
And that's the thing too. That's the, like, not on my watch. No.
Yes.
I'm not gonna take this sitting down. I'm not gonna sit in the seat like you told me to. Like, I'm going to fight. And if it's the last thing I'm gonna do, I'm gonna do it well.
Yeah.
You know, and they freaking won. They succeeded. And the hijackers didn't get what they wanted. Because that could have killed hundreds of people, thousands of people. But they said no. Not today. Yeah,
I think the working theory is that the target was either going to be the White House or the Capitol building. Which, yeah, that would have been... Oof. Yeah, and obviously, as we're reading off these names, we do apologize if we butcher any of them. We're doing our best on these. So, next one up is Chief Peter J. Gansey Jr. He was the chief of department for the entirety of the FDNY. He was the highest ranking FDNY officer. He led the department's rescue efforts. And after the South Tower collapsed, he continued directing operations and refused to leave the area. Just, it's like, no, I'm not going to go. My guys need me here. He was killed when the North Tower collapsed.
That's what kills me with all these guys, is like the... Like... And courage is a choice, right? Because everyone's going to be scared. But just the choice of, you know, I have every option. I have every avenue to escape, to run, to flee. And that's not what I'm choosing.
Yeah. Today. I have every opportunity to save my own life. But instead, I choose to save others.
Yeah. Golly. Officer Moira Smith, NYPD. Officer Moira Smith was the first officer to radio in the plane crash at the World Trade Center. She immediately began evacuating people from the South Tower, leading dozens to safety. She died while still inside the tower, helping others to escape.
Yes. Chief Arroyo Palmer, FDNY Battalion Chief. Chief Palmer reached the 78th floor of the South Tower, one of the impact zones. He organized rescue efforts and calmly called for assistance despite the devastation around him. He perished when the tower collapsed, but his actions inspired so many other firefighters and rescuers.
Well, being that voice of calm and professionalism.
Yeah.
Like, not only speaking credit to yourself, but to everything you represent, and then to inspire others to continue your work. Yeah. God, I hate you for this episode.
I'm sorry.
You suck.
You're so welcome, though. Yeah.
I knew we were going to do something about this, but just focusing in on these guys. Golly, this sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. As someone who did talk over radio, there is a absolute difference between someone who's panicking and screaming over radio versus someone who is calmly relaying orders, calmly asking for assistance.
Well, the thing is, like, that's the, like, So he made it to the 78th. So one, he made it to the 78th floor, right? Outstanding, you know, show of his fitness and just the fact that he can do his job, right? But he's helping people out. But then to have the presence of mind that, hey, this is the most important thing that I can do. Like, I cannot do this on my own, and people need to be able to hear me. And to have that discipline and that control speaks so highly to him.
Yes.
Just, golly, dude. Frank DeMartini and Pablo Ortiz, construction managers for the Port Authority. DeMartini and Ortiz worked in the North Tower and are credited with saving at least 50 people by leading rescue efforts on multiple floors. They ignore evacuation orders and continue to search for and free people trapped in rubble and debris. Both perished when the North Tower collapsed. So, once again, screw you, no. I've got a job to do.
I'm not leaving.
Which isn't their job.
No.
By the way. Just
no.
They're just good men. Yeah.
Joseph Pfeiffer, FDNY battalion chief. Pfeiffer was one of the first firefighters on the scene and took command of operations in the North Tower. His brother Kevin Pfeiffer was one of the firefighters who died that day. Pfeiffer led the rescue efforts and was instrumental in saving many lives by coordinating the evacuation of firefighters before the towers collapsed. This is my favorite one.
Oh my gosh, I was going to say, do I get the goodest puppy?
You do.
Roselle, a yellow Labrador retriever and god dog for Michael Hingson. When the first plane hit the North Tower, Michael Hingson, who was working as a sales manager, felt the impact but didn't immediately know what had happened. Roselle remained calm, which helped reassure Hingson and the people around him. As smoke filled the air and panic ensued, Roselle guided Hingson and others down 1,463 steps from the 78th floor of the North Tower, leading them safely out of the tower just minutes before it collapsed. So, on the freaking floor where the impact was.
Hingson's blind, the way.
Yeah. So, you know, like we said, did not know what happened. No one knew what happened at that time. Just minutes before it collapsed, Hingson has said that Roselle stayed focused on her task throughout the descent, despite the chaos, debris, and loud noises. Roselle's calmness and bravery in guiding Hingson to safety earned her widespread recognition as a hero. Hingson later wrote a book titled Thunder Dog, The True Story of a Blind Man, His Guide Dog, and the Triumph of Trust at Ground Zero, sharing their inspiring story.
Goodest of girls.
Goodest girl.
Oh my gosh. And not to go unmentioned, but the canine heroes of 9/11, there were so many rescue dogs, hundreds of them.
Hundreds.
That played just a vital role in search and rescue efforts at Ground Zero. Dogs like Sirius, Port Authority, Police Department Explosive Detection Dog. He died in the collapse. While others such as, oh my goodness, how do I say this name? Bretagnan Traker?
Bretagnan.
Sure.
That's the best I can do.
Yeah. Tracker. Helps locate survivors and recover remains during the rescue mission. And there were not a lot of people recovered alive. And there were so many issues with these dogs not finding still alive victims that were actually starting to get dressed. Dogs were. So a lot of the rescue workers were actually like hiding in the rubble and allowing the dogs to find them so that they would, you know, find someone alive.
Keep their spirits up.
And not just keep going down the rabbit hole of depression. This podcast is sponsored by Blackbeard Firestarter. Blackbeard Firestarter has been our first choice in Firestarter since they introduced their Firestarter rope years ago.
Blackbeard offers their fire starters, their fire plugs, arc lighters, ferro rods, stormproof matches, everything you need to get a fire started.
Their products are made right here in the U.S., wind and waterproof, have an insane burn time, they're basically dummy proof.
And help you out, Blackbeard let us cherry pick from their store everything that we want, everything that we thought you needed to get a fire started, and we call it our Hard Time Strong Men Fire Kit. On top of that, they're also offering a 15% discount on anything in their store when you enter code STRONGMEN at checkout.
We can't recommend Blackbeard enough. They stand behind their products, and so do we.
Be sure to check them out at blackbeardfire.com and on Instagram at blackbeardfire. And as always, stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight.
But, like, and the... The thing is, why this is such a big deal is that these dogs were doing what we couldn't physically do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, dogs are amazing creatures, and the fact that, you know, like, find the equipment, you know, in the middle of New York City to try to find these people in tons of rubble and everything else, and these dogs were working around the clock. Yeah. Like, it would have been absolutely impossible to do the work that they did in the time frame they did.
Agreed. So.
First responders that died attempting to rescue as many people as possible from the North and South Towers. 434 members of the New York Fire Department, 23 members of the NYPD, 37 Port Authority Police Department officers.
That's hundreds of people.
Doing literally everything that they could.
Yeah.
But.
Yep.
And that doesn't, you know, we'll talk about after this section, but, you know, this is just counting the event. This is not about the thousands of, you know, of Americans lives lost in the ensuing conflict and the tens of thousands of casualties. You know, this is just the event itself.
This was the event that sparked, like we said, the 23 years now of the global war on terror.
Approximately 7,085 American service members died, and over 60,000 casualties in the war on terror.
And unfortunately, this next event was actually part of the global war on terror. This is the second 9/11. So, September 11th, 2012, we're talking about Benghazi. You have probably seen it in the movie of 13 Hours.
Heard it when Hillary Clinton said, "What difference at this point does it make?"
Yeah. So the too long didn't read version. There was an attack on a diplomatic consulate, supposedly a diplomatic compound. It was more or less a freaking Airbnb in Benghazi, Libya, and resulted in the deaths of four Americans. These four Americans included an ambassador, and there has never been an ambassador killed by a attack of this magnitude ever in history, except for 2012. And that was Ambassador Chris Stevens. He was the U.S. ambassador to Libya. He was one of the most experienced and respected diplomats in the region. He had served in Libya during the revolution that ousted Gaddafi and was a strong advocate for U.S.-Libyan relations. He was killed by smoke inhalation after being trapped inside the diplomatic compound as it was set ablaze by the attackers.
Mel Smith was the U.S. Foreign Service Information Management Officer. He managed communications and technology for the U.S. State Department. He was also an Air Force vet and well-known in the online gaming community. He also died from smoke inhalation during the attack at the compound.
Also there, probably about a mile down the... I think it was about a mile. Might not have even been a mile down the road. There was a CIA outpost. Because, I mean... CIA
totally
was
not connected.
Yeah, not connected at all. They were there, obviously, collecting information, you know, trying to influence.
Doing whatever the CIA does.
Weapons trafficking in the area. Yeah, you know. Doing CIA things. So these next two people were part of that CIA team and part of the rescue operation that ensued. Glenn Doherty, Glenn Doherty, Jesus, I can't even talk right now. Glenn Doherty was a CIA contractor and former Navy SEAL. He was part of the CIA security team sent to Tripoli to help defend the U.S. personnel in Benghazi. His team did the rescue those trapped at the CIA annex. And he later defended, well, yeah. His team was sent to rescue the personnel originally at the diplomatic compound. And then he was later involved in the defense at the CIA annex that was under attack. He was killed in a mortar attack at the CIA annex where he and his team were defending the compound.
Tyrone Woods was a CIA contractor and former Navy SEAL. I'm sensing a pattern. Woods liked Doherty. Doherty? How do you pronounce that?
Doherty.
Doherty?
Doherty.
Doherty. Was part of the CIA security team sent to respond to the attack. He played a critical role in defending the annex and protecting U.S. personnel. He was killed alongside Doherty in the same war attack on the CIA annex. Woods, or the Benghazi. Go for it.
Woods was actually originally stationed there. He was at the CIA annex. Doherty was later pulled in along with a couple of members of Delta and I guess Tripoli police. I don't know.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Right. The Benghazi attack sparked significant controversy and investigations into the security conditions at the U.S. diplomatic compound. Once again, in the States, if we are investigating ourselves. Anyway, as well as how the U.S. government responded to the crisis, it remains a key moment in the U.S. foreign policy and national security discussions.
I personally still don't believe the BS that they talked about how it was in response to the making fun of Muhammad thing. I think this was organized well in advance and planned well in advance.
For the response? For how complex the attack was? I mean, yeah. This was not we're just rolling with it kind of deal.
No, they 100% knew the CIA annex was there. They knew as soon as Chris Stevens came into country and went to compound, they knew exactly where it was. They scouted it out. I'm sure Benghazi police were on it with them. I'm sure locals fed them information as well. Like, as much as we tried to make the people of Libya like us, and I mean, a lot of them did, there were still people who, I mean, yeah, screw them. But
Mama said, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all.
You're not wrong.
Talk about the defenders.
Yes. So, some of the other heroes that helped defend and save lives there in Benghazi throughout that night of just pure hell. Mark Ozgeist, is a former Marine and a CIA security contractor. He played a key role in defending the annex during the attack. He was very seriously injured in a mortar explosion, but continued fighting. He basically had his arm hanging on by some skin and tendons. He later co-authored the book 13 Hours about the event.
Chris Tonto Peronto, former Army Ranger, CIA security contractor. Peronto was one of the key defenders at the CIA annex, helping fend off the attackers and providing critical support to other team members.
An absolutely hilarious character, too, in the movie.
Can I just say, like, what awesome freaking nicknames these guys got?
I know, right?
Like, nobody's named Goggles. Nobody has, like, these stupid names. Like, they got good names.
I'm sensing so much saltiness.
I can't help it. Like, my eyes suck, but Goggles, that's stuck. through everything. Like, and I got that nickname when everybody hated me. Like, that's, yeah, there's some saltiness there.
It is. John Tig Tegan. He's a former Marine and obviously CIA security contractor. Tegan was instrumental in organizing defense at the annex and coordinating attacks against the insurgents and ensuring the safety of other personnel.
Dave D.B. Benton, former Marine also Special known. Forces. What?
Also known as Dave D. Benton, also known as Boone.
CIA contractor, Ben was also part of the security team at the annex and worked alongside the other contractors to repel the attackers and defend the compound.
Jack Silva, not his real name.
Are you former sure? Navy. That sounds like a real name.
It sounds like it would be, but not his real name.
If that is your real name.
Former Navy SEAL and former CIA security contractor. He was obviously an ex-Navy SEAL, helped secure the compound and participated in the firefights during the attack on CIA annex and the firefights at the freaking compound, diplomatic compound.
Love how this is the one guy where we have to say it's not his real name.
Yeah. I actually don't know if he stayed in. I know he eventually. I think he did end up leaving service at the CIA and went back to being a insurance salesman, I think. At least that's the last I remember. But no, that was a real messed up situation. It was, if you're an outsider looking in, it was a freak accident. Just absolutely escalated.
But there's no good way for that. The thing is, there was no good way for that to go, but they didn't get the support they needed.
That is 100% true. There should have full stop been every single asset in the region, like rerouted to them. There should
what that been. Tells me is that, like, State Department just washed their hands, essentially.
Oh, man, not even State Department. Freaking Obama, Clinton.
Hillary, yeah.
Yeah. Sleepy Joe, they all just said, no, deal with it on your own, guys. You know, we're not going to help.
Good luck.
Yeah, exactly. There should have been AC-130s. There should have been Reapers. There should have been Preds. There should have been
gas. Everything.
F-16s. There should have been every single
asset we had.
Yeah. Yeah. That
they, like they we talked just, about. Did we talk about on the podcast? Black Hawk Down. Have we talked about that yet?
I don't think we have. We might have, but I don't.
We need to do that.
A good analyzation.
Yeah, we need to go through that. But like every asset available or could be available, they threw at them.
Yeah.
But you know that. I mean, but like this to me just shows the utter contempt.
Mm-hmm.
For our service members.
And incompetence.
And just the American people in general.
They should have turned everything outside of that annex to glass, to rubble.
Absolutely, like you're telling me you can kill whatever. Like, you know, like there's so many things that they could have done, and then after the fact, just to have the gall to be like, "What difference at this point does it make? It's already done." Hillary Clinton, by the way, but. Like to have the gall, the utter contempt to say that out loud, like in an investigative committee, like for what you did.
Yeah, the lack of just personal responsibility is astounding. Absolutely astounding.
Yeah.
And it's not lost on me that this attack happened on the day that it did.
Oh, absolutely.
It shouldn't be
definitely pre-planned. Pre-planned.
11 years later, to the day, while there was an ambassador in the country. Yeah. Kudos to them for a well-executed plan, for sure. And more kudos to the response from these defenders, you know, from the...
oh my gosh, to have everything thrown at you and to have zero support and to still pull that off. Absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely.
Like, oh, talk about giving... like, talk about being given an impossible situation. Like...
yeah. I think...
but,
I personally think that this situation probably pissed me off as much as, if not more so, than 2001 did. Because this should have never gone down the way it did. This should have been an overwhelming landslide victory
for the U.S. Well, it's like a slap in the face. Because... yeah. 9/11/2001, yet again, another surprise attack by a bunch of cowards, right? Mm-hmm. Supposedly. 9/11 out in 2012, it's not like we didn't freaking know. It's not like this was a surprise.
Well, and the funny part was a memo.
And you're... but, like, and you're just not going to do anything. Like, that's unforgivable. That's irredeemable for me.
Part of that, too, is kind of on the State Department guys for not being like, well, we're not in a good location. This is not great to defend. We're really relying on 17 Feb, the local militia, to defend us. We're literally like a handful of dudes in a shotgun style compound. And when I say that, it's just like you go in the front gate, you can literally go straight to the back gate. It's just straight through. The setup was terrible. It was
not... to rely on the local populace is retarded.
Yeah, it's... They're unreliable. It's the same principle as the Swamp Fox dudes. They at some point they were on your team. Other times they disappear. Other times they're fighting for the other side. Everybody knew everybody in there. I mean, if you watch the movie.
My thing is, like, if you could, like, you have intel in the air. You know how easy these could be bought off. You know what I mean? Like that. Like if you don't have the right carrot, carry a bigger stick. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, absolute failing on all sides. Except for the defenders who actually did their freaking jobs. But
yeah.
Anyways.
All in all, the September 11th is definitely a hollow ground of a date. If it wasn't for sure the first time, it definitely was the second time. I mean, first time we lost almost 3,000 people. Second time we lost significantly less, but we lost an ambassador, which has never happened.
Well, I think it's the precedent.
It is. It just shows that we can be touched.
Well, I mean, like, you know, think about being an ambassador, being a defender, and seeing this happen. It's like, oh, crap, that could have been me. And the people who, like, matter in leadership aren't going to have my back.
Right.
Like, imagine what that does for morale and just for your day-to-day, you know?
Yeah, that's the big takeaway. Because I know in me, just thinking that, just knowing that feeling of, hey, you know, we got left on our own. And we got lucky and we survived. And our leaders just said, you, that makes me personally want to go kill them. And I'm sure that sparks it in everyone else too. Because it's like, what a failure of leadership. What an absolute failure of leadership. What a bunch of corrupt individuals. I don't care if it's Republican. I don't care if it's Democrat. These people left them to die.
Yeah.
They watched it like a football game in the Situation Room.
Well, like I said, it just so it shows the utter contempt in them. Like anyone that they perceive to be lower or less important.
It should have lit. Contempt. And this is just our personal opinion, but in my opinion, just the date alone, the significance of the date, and the fact that we had an ambassador in town should have lit an absolute fire under them, where it should have been a Black Hawk Down situation. It should have been full stop, all assets on site. Don't care.
Well, I remember even like when we were deployed, it was every major date that we could think of. It was higher alert, 9/11, Christmas, Thanksgiving, like all those days. It's like, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen now.
Mm-hmm.
And you were on your freaking A game because you assumed something was going to happen. You know, just. But yeah, like you said, in somewhere where you know you don't have that kind of support, like what we did, like we were well in a way established. But to be at an annex outpost like that, like, yeah, there's no excuse. There's no excuse for that.
Yeah. It's kind of like when we were deployed, the call to prayer was a Bwong.
No, freaking care. I hate it.
Every time the evening call to prayer came on, countdown started. Like, here we go. As soon as it ends, give me 60 seconds. Put it on the clock. And like clockwork. Incoming.
Boom.
Boom. Like, you knew it was coming. So why not just assume that it's going to happen? Why send out a memo saying, oh, this could happen? It's like, no, screw that. High alert. No one's relaxing. No one's sitting there, shoes off, sitting around the fire, drinking. Like, screw that noise. High alert. 9/11, guys.
Yeah.
But let's come off this tangent. You know, there is, regardless of the politics, regardless of your opinions of what happened, whether you're right or left, there's one thing we can all agree on. Like, the significant loss of life should never have happened. The significant loss of life could have been so much higher had it not been for the actions of individuals like the ones we mentioned.
I mean, if they sat back and did nothing, imagine the numbers.
It would have been double.
Imagine the devastation.
It would have easily been double. We would have been looking at 6,000 plus. Yeah.
Yeah. The good men and women did what they knew they had to do.
Yeah. The only thing required for evil to triumph is for a good man to do nothing.
1,000%.
And on both those days, good men did something. So if there's anything to take away from this, be it that. Be that good man. Be that good woman. Do something. Yeah. Do the right thing. Help your fellow man.
Because the thing is, like, we've shown you two sides of the coin of how you can be remembered.
Yeah.
You know, choose the right one. Because we do remember. And that's been our promise for over 20 years now.
Yep. As many people have forgotten, the easiest way to never forget is to keep telling the stories. And that's what I promise to do. I will forever, as long as my lungs draw breath, I will continue to tell the stories of those who have done the right thing, who have tried to help other people in the face of certain death.
100%. And in that too, you know, we can't, not to, you know, drive back into another tangent, but not to allow the, you know, their memories to be sullied. Yes. Or to be used for, you know, evil, wicked ends. Because what's happened in the, you know, in the aftermath of these attacks has been detestable. You know, it's been a stain on the country, the Patriot Act, you know, turning against our own citizenry, surveillance state, you know, all the, you know, forever wars, all this crap that has been, you know, allowed is absolutely detestable.
Those that give up a little bit of freedom for a little bit of safety deserve neither.
And we'll lose both.
And we'll lose both. The founding fathers called that, and here we are. We've done exactly what we shouldn't have.
Yeah. But we've seen the aftermath of that. And we have an example of people, heroes, who are willing to do the right thing at the hardest possible time. And we remember before the world and the country that we lived in. So that would be my closing thing. Do the right thing. Be courageous, even when it's easy not to. And if we want to go back to better times, because we're in hard times, but if we want to go back to better times, we need to be strong and courageous. And like you said, as long as we remember, as long as we don't allow ourselves to forget, we'll always have that example. Always.
Said. Well, guys, this has been the Hard Time Strongman podcast. Episode on 9/11 in remembrance. This is Six. I'm here with Seven. As always, stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight.
Check out our Discord, where we talk about all of the topics that we talk about in our conversations, but in deep dive format. We have a lot of members on there of varying skill sets, of varying proficiencies, all talking about all these topics, sharing their experiences. So join today and help us expand our knowledge base.
And check out our Patreon outside of just backing up all of our episodes for when we eventually get canceled. Our patrons get access to our exclusive episodes, our pre-shows, our post-shows, our little tidbits here and there that we aren't really supposed to talk about. We're also opening up all of these exclusive episodes for people to individually purchase. So you don't have to get tied into a tier in order to get all that content. You can dip your toes in a little bit, decide you like it, then come and join us on that. We're having exclusive conversations, and along with the Discord, we are just building that community, building that skill set, that mastery, these proficiencies. And this, outside of our sponsor, is what's keeping the lights on and keeping all of this information, all these classes rolling for you guys. So make sure to check out our Patreon. And one last thing, guys, the world is better with you in it. If you're feeling suicidal or if you're in crisis, dial 988 or reach out at 988lifeline.org to get help. Someone's always on the line. So if you need a lifeline, remember 988. Stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight.